Hey, this is Tegan Gaze, and you're listening to Music Row.
Welcome to Music Row, a backstage pass to your favorite country artists. Here's your host, Leek.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Good show for you today. Tegan Gaze joins us. She has a new single called The Best Part. We get into that. We get into the upbringing of she in small town British Columbia, now living in Nashville as country singer-songwriters do. And of course, because it is a podcast about country music, we get into an in-depth conversation about figure skating. Tegan Gaze, The Best Part, we talk all about that in just a bit on today's program.
Wherever there's a heartbeat and a stage, there's an artist set to perform. This is Music Row On Tour.
Brought to you by the Pecan Agency, connecting fans with bands worldwide. You can check out the James Barker Band, the Bud Light Buckle Up Tour. November 1 in Markham, Ontario. November 5 in St. Catharines. Lainey Wilson's Whirlwind World Tour, which I do believe will go on for another 18 years. It seems like it's been going on forever. Good for her. November 1st, find that show stopping in Woodlands, Texas. And then in Orlando, Florida on November 8th. And Eric Church, his Free the Machine tour continues November 6th, Rogers Arena in Vancouver, BC, and Inglewood on November 15th. Coming up on Music Row, Tegan Gaze.
Hi, my name is Kim Stockwood. I am a proud Newfoundlander and a Canadian singer-songwriter. In a landscape where many lack access to health benefits or employee assistance programs, the Unison Fund serves as a lifeline of hope for musicians and music industry professionals facing medical emergencies or mental health challenges. To learn more about Unison and their programs, please visit unisonfund.ca.
Hey, this is Tegan Gaze, and you're listening to Music Row with my buddy Leek. I got this. I know, I feel so tall. I love it.
How have you been?
I've been good. I still have to laugh because...
Wait a minute, can you talk? Can you talk into a microphone?
Yes, sorry. Yes, I can.
I appreciate
that is what this is for, right?
I appreciate this. I am well.
Good.
Tegan, what's going on?
I've released a new single, so I'm promoting the new single, The Best Part. Mm-hmm. But I have to bring up really quickly because this still makes me laugh when I was in Key West. Do you remember when I messaged you last year?
Well, you messaged me a lot, so you're going to have to go into a little bit more detail.
I messaged you because
this was
I thought...
sexting or just a regular message?
This one was just a regular message.
Okay.
Yes. But I saw you. I thought I saw you in Key West.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And I was like, Jeff. And I called out your name. Turns out it wasn't you, obviously. And I texted you. I was like, are you in Key West? Like, I thought I saw you and I called your name and I knew it wasn't you, but I just want to tell you. And you're like, yeah, it wasn't me. You scared the shit out of me. It's like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
That's a good line.
Yeah, it was. It was good.
That
it
sounds like
laugh.
The way I would text.
Yeah, it made me laugh.
The video that you and Shantaya shot from down there, there was a one video where it's, hi, I'm Shantaya and I booked all this. And you said, and I'm Tegan. And then Shantaya comes back on and she goes, and I booked the hotels and I booked all the stuff. And it just kept on going back to you going, and I'm Tegan.
Yeah.
Basically, she was your travel guide for
she
that Key West vacation.
Always. She is mom, 100%. Anytime we go anywhere, she looks after me. She takes care of me. She is mom. And I'm the mess. I lost my phone the first 10 minutes I was there. She found it for me. Like, that is just Shantaya through and through. She's such a good, like, mom. I don't know how else to call her.
Now, how did you find the phone? Was it Find My Phone? Were you using the app? Because most people don't even know how to function that's even a possibility still. Because the iPhone's only been around for 15, 18 years.
Well, as a bestie, she has my location. So she knew where it was from, like, her location.
Do you follow her? Do you, like, know where she is?
Yes, we follow each other all the time. Well, I feel like more follows me. It depends if I'm, like, looking, but, like, if I want to see where someone is or whatever, but I know that she's always like one time we went out one night and I didn't message her. I slept in and it was like noon and she messaged me.
Slept in till noon.
Well,
way to go.
I know. It was a late night. It was a really late night. It was a weekend. I'm allowed to sleep in sometimes, but it was really late and she messaged me and she couldn't get a hold of me and she started freaking out. It ended up getting to like 2 o'clock and my phone was dead and I just didn't turn on. I just was like, I'm keeping my phone dead for the day. And she started freaking out. She called all my friends. She tried calling my boyfriend. He didn't answer. Then she was really worried. She was like, oh my God, like, did they both die? Like, What happened?
She went to my apartment. So at least she doesn't jump to extremes. She doesn't jump to extremes at all. Eh? Oh, she tried messaging my boyfriend and he didn't answer. So maybe they're both dead.
Or he killed me. One of the two. She was like, what happened? Like, I don't know what went on, but she ended up like digging deep. I don't know how she found me, but like finally my boyfriend turned on his phone. So all these missed calls from Shantae. I turn on my phone. He's like, call Shantae right now. I was like, what's up? She's like, well, you went out last night and you weren't answering your phone and I got worried. And I'm like, that is just her to a T. She is such a good friend.
That is so awesome because I grew up in a time where you would go out for the day and your parents didn't care where you were, what you were doing. Like in my case, I was building ramps out of wood that I found in a ditch that had rusty nails on it. And I was like halfway across the province or wherever I was on my bike. My parents never cared.
Yeah.
Didn't know. As long as I got back for dinner and then before the streetlights came on, everything was okay. But now today, maybe they would follow me.
Totally. If they have your location, it's so fun. Maybe I'll be they like would. The Starbucks.
They might be lazy. Shantae sounds like very.
She's on it. She's like.
Engaged.
She's very engaged. She's very on it. She cares about her people so much. My mom, this is like, my mom is hilarious because I'll be in the Starbucks drive-thru and she'll be like, quit
BC
spending
mom?
Money. Yeah. Yeah. She'll be like, quit spending money. Get out of the Starbucks. I'm like, sorry, mom.
Meanwhile, you're in Nashville going to Starbucks and she's sassing you from British Columbia.
Totally.
Where in British Columbia?
So they're in Kelowna now, but originally Chetwynd, BC.
Okay, now how big is this Chetwynd town?
3,500. Yeah, 3,500 people, very small, one stoplight. I think now there's two, but very tiny town.
Okay, when did country music become a thing for Tegan Gaze?
Were you
in Chetwynd or were you on your way out to Kelowna or what was going on?
Yeah, it was definitely while I was in Chetwynd because I used to be a figure skater. I was a competitive figure skater growing up. That was my whole life, like morning skate, lunch skate, after school skate, off ice, competitions every weekend, summer school, spring school. Like I was very competitive. That was my life for 14 until I was 14 or 15. And when I quit music, I always liked to sing. I always enjoyed
when
music.
You quit skating.
Yeah. Like even when I was skating, like I always liked music. Like I liked to sing and sometimes I would do like little competitions and stuff here and there. And when I quit skating, you have to be so driven in that sport. Like it is very much like the drive. And I had that drive. I always had that drive. But when I quit, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then that's when I kind of turned to music. And at the time I didn't like really write. I kind of would just like sing covers and do these little competitions. And when I started getting into writing, which of course Taylor Swift, she was the reason that I was like, wow, like that's so cool. She's writing her own songs. And like, I was a big Family Channel girl. I loved all the Family Channel kids that were like doing music. And so that was like where I was like, wow, like this is what I could probably do. And I wanted to do that. So I begged my mom one year to let me homeschool. I was like, mom, I don't want to go to school. I feel like I don't fit in, which is so not true. Like I fit in school fine, but I really wanted to stay home so I could write music. So my mom.
So you actually said, I want you to homeschool me, AKA don't teach me shit. Oh, I'm just going to write songs.
Oh no, she was going to school herself for business, I believe at the time. My dad was working. So she trusted that I was going to stay home and do my homework, but I didn't. I would show her old homework from the year before and I would just write songs all day. So of course that semester, I ended up failing that semester because I didn't do anything. Like I could not teach myself to save my life. Like that's hard. Like props to anyone who can homeschool and do that for themselves because I have to have someone physically like show me and tell me what to do.
Giving you deadlines.
Exactly. So my mom was like, well, she's like, you kind of screwed this semester up. So she sent me to the ski hill. I started snowboarding that year. She sent me to the ski hill. I snowboarded that season. I stayed with a sweet little family and I wrote songs the rest of the season. And then when I came back the next semester, I had to take like all my hard classes and like catch up. And like I passed, obviously, like I graduated, I went to college, but that's how I kind of got my start in
your
music.
Mom said, you can't just sit around here and write songs. You got to at least go, you got to go get a job somewhere.
Well, I didn't even work. No, I just went to the ski hill and skied. I snowboarded for the rest of the season. My mom was just like, I just can't. And I like love snowboarding at the time too. She was like, just go to the ski hill, write songs. Like, you know, obviously you're very passionate about it. So she was sweet and she did that. But then it was just really hard when I came back the next semester, because usually you get to take like your food classes and your fun classes, but it was like math, science, all the whole semester. So I had to really catch up. But
so you took the side of you had the figure skating, which had all the discipline, you know, you're going to practice at 5 a.m. You're practicing after school competitions all weekend. And that's all great until you blow a piston. Like you probably blew out your knee or your ankle.
Honestly, Jeff, it wasn't even that. I didn't love it anymore. You know, it wasn't really my passion. And I was really good at it from a really young age. And I did it just because that's what I always did. I didn't know any different. And I got to a point where I was like, it's really expensive. I'm not like, my whole heart isn't in this. And so I was just, it was like one of those love hate relationships when I quit. Like when I quit, like I was done. Like I was like pushed to like my breaking point with it. And it was sad, but just because like when you quit like that, it's sad. I felt like I didn't quit in like a healthy way. It was just like, I'm done. Like I'm done. I've been pushed to my bound, like my limit with figure skating.
What's a healthy way to quit?
I don't know. Like where we grew up, it was always very exciting when you graduated because you got to do, we had like a carnival every year and all the people who were graduating and it was their last skate got to do like this last skate. And I was like, no, I was like, I don't love it anymore. I just didn't love it. And so I kind of quit like harshly, hung up my skates and then I was like, okay, well now I have all of this like drive, like it's innately in me. Like I'm a very driven person that I was like, what am I going to do? And then that's when I found music and I'm so glad I did because it's like something I love and that I chose, where I felt like with figure skating, it was just something that I just kind of did, you know, it was just something I did because I was good at it.
Right. So you wrap up skating, yeah, and the engine is still revving.
Yeah.
And you got like, where am I driving to?
Yeah, exactly. Where do I go? And then I found music. So it's actually a cool story. I've skated a couple times since then, put on the skates, and it's still like, it feels good to be out there and stuff. I can still do like all the cute little like spins and stuff that people think are like so hard. But when you've done it your whole life, you're like, oh, like that's the easy stuff. You know,
you're like one of 4% of the population of Tennessee who knows how to skate. I mean, you could either be a hero or a weirdo
to them.
It's like, what is going on here?
So true.
So music is becoming the thing and you're writing a lot. You're getting the reps in. Are you still going out and doing those talent shows and like call it a karaoke off or?
No, I mean, sometimes I like to do karaoke in Nashville. Like there's so many fun like karaoke bars, but more the competitions were more like, honestly, I love that I did the competitions because I learned how to be a really good loser with like music. Cause like I never usually won the competitions. Like I never won. And I was like, man, like, am I even good? And because I was either like second or I just like didn't win, like there were a couple things that I won. And like those wins, like they live with you because you're like, wow, it means like I'm good. I'm doing something. Like I remember I won a competition actually in Kelowna, and this was during college or right after college. It was to play a festival for Rock and River Fest. There was a festival there and me and Mitch Zorn. Have you heard of Mitch Zorn?
Yes.
Okay. So he, amazing artist, but we won this competition together and we went and we did Rock and River Fest together. So it was really cool to be like, wow, we kind of like started out together and we won this competition. We got to play. So I think that was like the last like competition, like in that kind of era. And then there was Sirius XM when that was another like really big win for me. Like those wins just make you feel like you need those wins to kind of keep going. Cause there's a lot of you have to be a good loser in this industry.
That would be the thing that I hated most about the Top of the Country program on Sirius XM is I developed the whole thing from, you know, year one to where it basically is now. And you get so used to these people who you're working with throughout the year and you're seeing them rise and it's all great. And then you have to have a winner. And I thought, this sucks because they're all great.
Yeah.
And I hated that part of the Top of the Country where it's like, okay, you're number one today, I guess. And yeah, I bet you if we did the Top of the Country finale on Thursday night, it would be a different winner on the Friday night, and it would be a different winner on the Saturday night. Like depending on where the moon went for probably 3 of the 7 years that I did it.
The thing about that competition though was it was more than a competition. Like that was still probably like the best, most like fun year of my life because you got to do so much. Like you felt like on top of the world for a whole year and it was so cool. And like everything that we like got out of that, like all the press, like everything, like it was just such a cool experience that, yes, even though I didn't win, I felt like a winner. You know?
Well, it was developed not to, again, have that winner, but it was to elevate the artists.
Yeah.
And that was mission day one.
Yeah.
How can we promote artists to another level that they may not be currently at today?
Totally. It was such a cool experience.
And give them cash.
Yeah. Right. I know. Exactly. We still got cash. We got so much out of that. And still to this day, one of the funnest years of my life. I felt so good during the whole experience.
Now, there was one thing that I thought that was kind of funny that it came to my mind the other day. We went out for lunch in Nashville and someone picked a restaurant that hadn't turned the heat on in 78 years. And it was so cold. And I felt so bad for you and Haley, because Haley Benedict is sitting beside you. We're having lunch and you're both shaking. And you're both just like, I can take it. It's fine. And I'm like, this is a horrible experience. Why are we making these two people?
To be honest, I don't even remember being cold or remember anything. So
chattering.
Don't horrible. Even. That's.
And then you go outside into Nashville and it's typical Nashville summer day in June. It's 9,000 degrees.
Was this Sadie's when we were in Nashville and Tyler Joe came and Sasha?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Great restaurant, by the way. I still go to the restaurant today.
You wear a sweater now.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I mean, I said, that wasn't even on my mind that we were cold if we were, but I don't know.
So what was your move then? Why did you end up going to Nashville?
It's funny. Someone asked me this recently. I think because it's you live and breathe, where else can you walk outside that there's 20 people wherever you are that are chasing either the same dream or that are in the industry, the writing, everyone there is writing. You don't know who you're going to run into. So I think for that reason,
did you give it a tester? I'll go to Nashville for 2 weeks and see if I like it. And then I'll make that decision to be more committed to it.
100%. I think I was going to Nashville for a year and a half to 2 years, just on trips. So I'd go for a month or 2 weeks or couple months or whatever. Cause at first I was I loved being there, but it didn't feel like home. It was a little scary and it was so go, go, go that I was happy to go home and, take a beat. But then once I started meeting friends and it started to feel like home, and now it does feel like home. Kelowna also feels like home because my family's there. That my mom has that cup I got her, a home is where your mom is, but it's true. So it's weird. It feels like home because now I have enough friends there where they feel like family. My friends are my family down there. So last Christmas, I didn't go home for Christmas. It was my first year. I didn't go home for Christmas just because flights were really expensive. I didn't know what was going on for Christmas and I stayed, but I hung out with Lindsay and her family and
all the bastards.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All these people that are just imports from other locations.
Yes. And it was honestly, it was amazing. I was wow, these people are my family now. So it was cool. It's cool. I love it.
And plus Nashville though, that's where your work is.
Yes.
If you're going to Kelowna now where mom is, that is to hang out and just chill. That's a vacation time.
Yes, which was weird because then the CCMAs were in Kelowna this year. So I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, this is going to be so fun, but also so weird because Country Music Week in Kelowna, it was amazing. It was so cool. But I came a couple days ahead and hung out with my family. And then the day when CCMA started, right before the first party, the kickoff, I was like, wow, CCMAs are here. And then I was like, I wonder what it's going to feel like or be like. But as soon as we got to the block party and everyone in the industry was there, I was like, yeah, this is sick.
And did you play 100 times? And
I did.
Every time you turned around, it was another performance.
Yes. It was awesome. And it was special because I got to do the kickoff party on the Ford stage, the very first day of the block party. I got to meet the mayor. I just got to see everybody. And it was nice because I haven't released music in over a year. So it meant a lot that I was a part of the CCMAs.
Didn't
so
you release
ways.
An album though in 2020?
2019, I think, 2020 or 2019. So that's an interesting story because that was before I was even, I would say, in the industry. I didn't know anyone in the industry at that time.
That's what I'm saying. You had an album out before most people would be recognized yet. You just kind of went album first and then it's I'm going to go say hi to people now.
Well, yeah, that album, I actually met Parker McCollum's brother. I became friends with Parker McCollum's brother. He lives in Texas. I went down to Texas. I was like hanging out down there. I got into the Texas world and I was like,
romance?
No. Just
Ro-no.
No. He was just like, we like bonded over music and like he wanted to be a producer. He like was like, I would like to produce your album. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, I have some songs like that I've written myself that I have like in the chamber. And he's like, yeah, come down and we can like go in the studio and we can like, I'll produce you. I was like, sick. Okay. Great family, great guy. Like the whole McCollum family is so sweet. But it was really cool because I was such a big fan of Parker at the time. And like, I got to like meet him and I was like, oh, this is so cool. And the Texas community is so, they're so welcoming and they're so sweet. I got stuck there during COVID. So I was hanging out like during COVID there, like, you know, stuck with my friend Christina in her house. And it was a really crazy era. And then it wasn't until I released I Don't Want to Fall in Love Anymore that I was actually listening to Jim Kressman's podcast. And during COVID, when I went back to Cologne, I was like, oh, like I have this song and I really want to like record it. Who can I record this with? And then there was a guy named Jeff Johnson who lived in Coldstream, and everyone's like, he's a great producer. So I ended up recording the song with him during COVID. And then I was listening to the Jim Kressman podcast. And this is where like, kind of like everything kind of started to like move for me. I reached out on the podcast. Jim was talking to Shiloh Bellis, and Shiloh was like, I wish artists would send me their music more often because like ultimately I'm the one that puts it on the radio. And I was like, sure, I'll send him the song. It's not done yet. Like, I think it still needed to be mixed, but it was recorded. I sent it to him expecting like harsh criticism, expecting him to be like, yeah, this needs some work. But he was like, this is amazing. You need to put this in for a trending track. And I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. Like, I have no idea. I have no idea what this world is, right? I had no idea. And so I was like, it's not done yet. And he's like, well, just, it sounds great. I was like, well, I still need to mix and master it. So I mixed and mastered it, sent it in. I ended up getting trending track, ended up getting my first top 50. And I didn't even know what was going on. And then I went to my first CCMAs. I'd never been to a CCMAs
before. So you have no setup. There's nothing. It's just, you're just winging a prayer.
Yep. I had no idea. I went in and the first CCMAs, I think that was London, had no idea what to expect. I went there knowing nobody. The only person I really knew was Chris Buck, and he was an angel and like introduced me to everybody. I definitely cried a couple of times just because it was very overwhelming, like being some, like when you don't know anybody, no one really knows you. And it's just like, you feel like, like, do I belong here? Should I be here? Cause I always thought growing up, in order to go to a CCMAs, you had to be like nominated or something, like a reason to go there, where it's not like that. Like that's a time for everyone to go and connect and network and meet everybody. And by the end of the CCMAs, I was like, wow, I'm so sad that I missed out on so many of these. Cause I just didn't know. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know what the thinking
okay.
was.
As long as you come away with it with some sort of learning.
Oh, yeah.
And now you're using it to your benefit.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about, you've had songs, you've done lots of co-writes with some pretty famous people on that, but songs that have taken off in a viral fashion. When you're releasing music and you've had something that gets 5 million hits on TikTok and all that, when you're releasing songs now, are you like, son of a bitch, that only got 1 million hits? Are you like, are you looking at it? Because you have access to so much data today where the trending track data, there was nothing. It didn't exist. When your music is played on a radio station, there's no data that comes back. So are you looking at data that's coming back and going, well, clearly I have to write another one that has more of the same hooks and the tempos that the other one did that worked and stuff?
Yeah.
Or are you going, I just got to be me?
No, the whole social media thing, like, and I love social media. Like I think social media is such a great platform to reach more people, but also to show your personality. And so for that reason, like I love social media, but it can be very draining, daunting when say I post something and it doesn't do that well. And then you get in your head and you're like, well, am I good enough? Like, was this not good? But you kind of just like, I've kind of gotten over that, I would say, a little bit, and you just got to keep going. You just got to keep going, you got to push through and just honestly just keep going. I don't know what else to say except because it can be hard.
Writing with these different producers, different writers and stuff, is it therapy in a positive way and also in a negative way? Because you're like bringing up all these thoughts and memories and you're like, gosh, I don't know if I feel good about what I just exposed myself with or...
It feels amazing. Honestly, like, especially this last year. And I love, as you can tell, I bright up talking about this because this last year has been so amazing just writing about things that are actually going on in my life. Because I feel when I first started co-writing, so I used to write a lot by myself on my own. And when I did that, of course, I wrote my feelings and everything. But then when I started co-writing, because I didn't start co-writing until like late, I didn't even know what that was. So I started co-writing and then I kind of was like, whatever the best hook was, like whatever the best line was, it was more just like whatever, you know, whatever the best hook was. But then this last year I was like, I have some shit to say. I went through a couple breakups and I was just in my feels.
Were you engaged?
No. Gosh, no. Never even close. Okay. In any way, shape or form.
Cause isn't there a line in the new song?
Oh, okay. Well, the best part is just, you know, about a guy who kind of skipped out before things got good. He missed the best part. Like, you missed the white picket fence. You missed the wedding. You missed out on this. Like, that's the whole point of that song.
Sorry, I was taking it so literally. You're talking about exposing yourself and being writing about your real experiences. You released the best part and it's about someone missing the best part. I'm like, uh-oh.
Well, it's more just like, you could have had that, you know, like you could have had the marriage, you could have had that like wonderful life with me, but instead we broke up and you decided to like ditch, like you fumbled. It's just like kind of like that one was fun to write because I was going through a sad girl era where I was just writing a lot of heartbreak stuff. And I was like, I need something like a little bit more upbeat and fun, a little bit more confident for the girls, for the guys who just kind of to showcase that like they're the ones that missed out, you know?
Because you can get over it.
Yeah, exactly.
Life will go on. It's going to be fine.
Sure does. But man, in the moment, it sure doesn't feel like it.
Where is the best spot to find Tegan Gaze online? Is it your Instagram? Do you care about your TikTok or you're happy about your TikTok? Because I know you've got like 100 million views of all your stuff now.
No, I love TikTok. And like I said, I love social media. So follow me on social media because that's where I feel like I get to just be myself and showcase me because... you know, I'm quirky, I'm silly, I'm just a little all over the place. And I love socials for like that reason. And I'm always posting like my music on there. Like I've been pushing hard for this single. So you're going to get like a lot of fun, cute content on there. So
what's the address? At Tegan Gaze?
Yeah. My Instagram is TeeksXO. Tegan Gaze. So you can find me just Tegan Gaze. But
if you got the Google machine,
the Google machine, but no TikTok, X, like I'm on all of it. I try and be very active on all of it as much as I can. So
that's why your phone's always dead.
I know. Truly. It's always at 1%. It's like a running joke in my family and my friend group. Like my phone is always dead. Always.
Tegan Gaze, thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
Follow Music Row on X at Music Row Country. On Instagram at Music Row Official. Music Row is produced by Shed of Dreams.